Hi, and welcome to The Missing Middle. I'm Kara Stern.
And I'm Mike Moffitt.
Today, we're very excited to have our first politician on this program. Mike Schreiner is the leader of the Ontario Greens and has brought a lot of YIMBY energy to Queen's Park, and we're so excited that he's joining us today. So welcome, Mike.
Hey, Karen, Mike. It's my pleasure to join you. And I'd say housing, obviously, is the hottest topic at Queen's Park, or at least I'm trying to make it the big topic at Queen's Park. So I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. I want to start with, like, first of all, just I know you've got a couple housing bills in the works. Can you tell us a bit about what they are and how they're going?
Yeah, Bill 44 and Bill 45 are basically designed to legalize building homes for people. Wow, we're in a housing crisis. Don't you think we should be building more gentle density and middle housing? And so Bill 44 makes it legal to build fourplexes and four-story walk-up apartments in existing single-family neighborhoods across the province. And Bill 45 would legalize 6 to 11 story apartment buildings or condos along major transportation corridors. Both are recommendations that come out of the Ontario government's housing task force. And these are issues I've been pushing for, oh my gosh, 2.5, almost 3 years now. And when we first came out with these proposals in our housing strategy, a lot of people thought, whoa, you're really pushing the envelope here. But increasingly, we're starting to see the conversation around legalizing housing becoming more and more mainstream. And my bills will be debated at the beginning of next year. And I'm hoping they're going to pass because we're starting to see all the parties at Queen's Park talk about getting rid of exclusionary zoning, talking more and more about missing middle and gentle density housing. So these are two solutions that I'm hoping I can get all party support for.
You said that it was part of the Housing Affordability Task Force suggestions to the government. Why do you think they didn't take these ones?
You know, you'll have to ask the premier. Like it was almost 2 years ago now that the Housing Affordability Task Force put out their report, and the government actually hasn't moved on many of those recommendations. They are starting to now, but instead they've really spent the last 2 years more focused on breaking all the rules to help a handful of wealthy Ford-connected speculators cash in $8.3 billion in the case of opening the Greenbelt lands for development, and untold amounts of money in the issues around forcing urban boundary expansions for a number of municipalities across the province. And, you know, I've been saying to the premier and the new housing minister, the government really needs to focus on building homes that ordinary people can afford in the communities they want to live in, that they know, they love, where they work, on land that's already approved for development, rather than focusing in on, you know, how do we create windfall profits for land speculators?
Yeah, so on that, on the need to build homes in the communities in which people live, the provincial government has set targets for 50 different municipalities across Ontario, and they've made them annual. You know, if we look at it for this year, they set a target of 110,000 homes, according to the provincial government's own fall economic statement. It doesn't even look like we'll hit 90,000. So cities are complaining about a couple of things. That first, these targets are unrealistically high, as if, you know, cities are going to conjure up an extra 20,000 housing starts in 8 weeks. But the second one, which I would like to ask you about, it's a little bit more wonky, but this is what the show is about. Municipalities are pushing back and saying, well, look, we don't build housing, except for maybe the city of Toronto. We just facilitate housing getting built. So we see the Ontario big city mayors asking to be assessed on approvals, not housing starts. Do you and the Greens have any position on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Cities do need to be assessed on approvals because at the end of the day, cities don't build homes. I mean, they approve the building of homes. And I would actually take it one step further, Mike, that the provincial government, through their changes to development charges a year ago, took $5.1 billion out of city budgets. And the government at the time promised that they would make cities whole, and they haven't done that. I mean, yesterday in the fall economic statement, they put forward a $200 million, you know, water infrastructure program. Well, it's just ridiculous to suggest that $200 million is going to replace the $5.1 billion they've taken away from cities. And why is that so important? I don't know about the rest of you, that when I move into my new home, I want the toilet to flush. I want to turn the taps on. You know, I'd like to have fire services and police services nearby. I'd like to be on transit, roads. I'd like to have hydro lines going. I'd like to access parks and libraries and all the other amenities that you need in a community to service new housing. And if the province is going to take away the municipality's ability to pay for that infrastructure, then it's going to become even more difficult for cities to meet those targets. And so I think we really need the province to, one, step up. I think some of the moves around, you know, use it or lose it legislation, that if you, you know, if developers don't use their housing approvals and they're taken away and somebody else can use them, are important steps in the right direction.
To be fair, they took away that one stream of getting money from developers to build these, but the municipalities can still get it from the people who are paying their property taxes, right? Like, don't they still have other revenue streams that they could be using?
Well, Kara, the challenge with that is it's going to compound and make the housing affordability crisis even worse, because they could increase property taxes. And in some cases, some municipalities are looking at possibly double-digit property tax increases. But think about somebody on a fixed income struggling to pay that kind of increase in property tax, how that's going to affect their ability to maintain home ownership. Think about a renter, because obviously landlords are going to flow those property tax increases to increases in people's rent. So that's actually going to make the housing affordability crisis worse. And I want to be clear, I'm not opposed to removing development charges. As a matter of fact, the Ontario Greens have called for removing development charges on truly affordable housing. But the province has to replace that revenue. Prior to development charges, the province would pay for that infrastructure needed to service new homes. When the province said it no longer wanted to do that, municipalities, I think, rightfully said, well, the property tax base can't afford this. And so the compromise was development charges. But if you're going to take those away, then the province has a responsibility to replace that funding.
I'm glad you mentioned this issue of affordability. I'm going to pivot a little bit. That we've seen historically concern about the environment or climate change be pretty pro-cyclical with the state of the economy. So the economy is doing well. People care more about fighting climate change, care more about the environment. And then, you know, we go into tough economic times, affordability crises, and you get this kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs that people are more concerned about paying the bills. I think we saw this federally in the last few days with the federal government taking carbon pricing off of heating oil. So, you know, at a higher level as green leader, you know, I think we have to admit that we're going into tough economic times. People are concerned about affordability. How can we make sure that they're still keeping climate top of mind? And how can we, you know, reconcile the need for affordability, but also the need to deal with the climate crisis?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. And we absolutely can address climate in a way that addresses people's affordability needs. I don't think the way in which governments are approaching it right now is the right way to go. I was really disappointed to see both federally and at the provincial level, the NDP and Conservatives actually teaming up to attack pollution pricing and essentially undermine climate action. So how can we do this? So one of the reasons I am so focused on my legislation to legalize housing within existing urban neighborhoods is that, one, that housing is so much more affordable to build. I mean, Mike, your own institute has, you know, done a report that shows that it costs 2.5 times more to service sprawl development versus development within existing urban boundaries. So if we're going to build affordable communities, we need to do things like legalize multiplexes, 4-story walk-ups, 6 to 11-story buildings within existing urban boundaries. That also saves people money, not only housing affordability, but also the cost of commuting. And when you think of what is the biggest driver of climate pollution in Ontario, it's transportation emissions. Most of that being driven by people being forced to commute because they have to drive until they qualify for a mortgage. So why not build affordable homes in affordable communities where people don't have to spend hours and thousands of dollars every month spewing out climate pollution to be able to, you know, get to work or, you know, shop or take care of their family's needs? Let's build affordable, connected communities where people can live close to work. Secondly, is let's build homes that are energy efficient and affordable to heat and cool. And let me give you a very concrete example of this, an exciting project I'm working on in Guelph with Habitat for Humanity and the Guelph Rotary Club, building a project that will be 72 affordable homes here in Guelph. We're raising the capital to put the solar panels on the roof of those homes that will save residents $62,000 a year. So imagine you're somebody struggling to find attainable, affordable home ownership. Here's an opportunity for you to have an affordable home to own and having utility savings of thousands of dollars each and every year, which, by the way, will reduce climate pollution because we know buildings are a significant source of climate pollution. So let's help people save money by saving energy and addressing climate at the same time. And housing and buildings play a critical role in that.
Something I've been wondering about is, given kind of how stacked the system seems to be against people in my generation and in younger generations, still voter turnout is extremely low. And I was wondering why you think that is.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question because we're seeing declining voter turnout in a lot of democracies. And I think especially south of the border, we're seeing increasing distrust in democracy. And I think one of the things is we need to show that government can provide solutions for people. And we also need to ensure, and this is on people like myself who are elected politicians, like we need to figure out ways that we can engage and mobilize voters. I think the Greenbelt controversy is an example of how you can build a people-powered movement that engages and mobilizes people to get government to change policy. But I also think we need to show ways in which government can be mobilized to solve problems for people. And I think housing is a great example of that. You know, most of 93% of the deeply affordable homes built in Ontario were built before 1995. What happened in 1995, both the federal and provincial governments got out of supporting nonprofit co-op social housing. So I think if government can play a role in helping to solve the housing crisis, it re-energizes people and instills confidence in people that government can be part of the solution. And so one of the reasons we've been so focused on market and non-market solutions to the housing crisis is to show how government policy and government budget priorities can address what, you know, in all the polling data I see is the number one concern that people have, and that's is how are we going to address this historic housing crisis.
So on that, so what would you say to, you know, I deal with fourth year undergraduates, and I have for a long time, and they're angry, you know, they're angry about the housing crisis, and they're angry about the climate crises, and you know, they're feeling like, you know, everything's basically going to hell, and they're not going to have a decent quality of life relative to their parents. So what would you say to young people who have lost faith in the system? You know, why should they go out there and continue to vote and support political parties and help out that way?
And have any hope.
And have any hope, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I have a 23-year-old, 18-year-old daughters, and both of them are saying to me, like, one, am I ever going to be able to afford a home, let alone pay the rent? And also, you know, my oldest daughter's been like, I don't know if I ever want to have kids because of the climate crisis and just the kind of world that we're leaving behind. And I think that's why it's so incumbent upon politicians like myself to be a part of helping to catalyze citizen people-powered movements for government to solve the challenges that people are feeling in their everyday lives. And this is why this historic housing crisis, I think, is so important for us to solve. I mean, my parents paid $12,000 for their first home in the early 70s. I paid in the late 90s about $150,000 for our first home. Like, you can't even imagine owning a home in Ontario right now for, I don't know what, $750,000 or something. Like, it's just ridiculous. So no wonder so many young people are feeling hopeless. And that's exactly why we need both market and non-market solutions to the housing crisis. And that's why I'm pushing so hard to work across party lines to say, hey, government has to get back involved in building nonprofit and co-op housing that's affordable for people. Government has to pass policies that legalize housing so we can build the gentle density and missing middle housing, the truly affordable housing in the communities that young people want to live in, close to where they work. And so I think that, as we've talked, is so connected to addressing the climate crisis as well. So I think if we can bring forward these kinds of solutions that people feel in their everyday lives, we can start restoring faith in government and in democracy.
Watching from afar, it kind of seems to me like there's no party or no leader that has really conveyed the frustration and anger that a lot of people have the way that conservative leader Pierre Poilievre has. And I find that a little surprising. Like, I don't know whether he's going to solve it is another question, but he's definitely capturing the anger. Why do you think, like, we're not seeing anyone really on the left wing at all? I don't see people conveying that as strongly. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, I think the conservative leader has really tapped into the anger and frustration people are feeling and has the resources to do it. I feel like I've been talking about the housing crisis probably longer than any other elected official, in at least at Queen's Park, if we could, you know, put it at the provincial level. I am putting forward solutions, but, you know, I'll be honest, the Green Party has limited resources. We simply don't have the capacity to be able to, you know, buy the kind of online advertising, to have the kinds of resources that gets our message out as effectively. But you know what? I'm going to continue to keep pushing. I'm going to continue to keep channeling the anger and frustration young people especially have around housing. But I think just as importantly, and this is where I think the federal conservative leader is falling down, actually putting forward practical, real solutions like legalizing housing, like having government get back into supporting nonprofit and co-op housing, like getting speculation out of the housing market. You know, we've been putting forward a plan that would bring in a multi-home speculation tax, because so many first-time home buyers are competing with speculators buying up single-family homes. And if they're going to distort the market in that way, then I think they should pay a tax for it to help create a more level playing field for first-time home buyers. So we're going to continue to, you know, channel frustration and anger, but channel it in a way that actually delivers solutions, especially for young people and especially for first-time home buyers and people just trying to have affordable rent. Because I oftentimes say to people, one of the first steps to being a first-time home buyer is having an affordable place to rent while you're saving up the down payment you need to buy that first home.
I think that a lot of the time, because when I see plans that are like, oh, we'll give a rebate for groceries, for example, I think, okay, well, maybe a couple $100 would help this month. But really, you know, what would really help is if your one bedroom apartment wasn't $2,500 a month. So everything's a drop in the bucket compared to that big bill you get every month for rentals. I'm excited to see what happens with your bill, considering you're taking what the conservatives, what their own task force had told them. I'm really curious to see how that plays out. And I hope you'll come back and keep us posted as that goes through. So thank you so much for joining us. We're really grateful you took the time.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, Kara, Mike, really enjoyed it.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. And if you're listening on our audio podcast, you should know this is also a video podcast. You can watch all of this on YouTube. Every episode is there. So come check out our beautiful faces there.
As Kara says, please like and subscribe. It would really help us out a lot.
And thanks as always to our producer, Meredith Martin. We'll see you next time.